Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, we're bringing you episode 8 of WandaVision, Instant Reaction, Previously On is the name of the episode, and I am so pumped to talk about it. All that right off the bat, we have no control over. Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
My name is Matthew Fox.
That's right. That's right. You're not Jeff Randall. We have a special guest, Matthew Fox, sitting in the chair because Jeff got called away to do his job.
Sorry, Jeff's not going to be here, but honored to be able to step up. And, you know, it's too bad because we don't really have much to talk about. What a boring, not much happened episode.
Yeah, it really is just paint by numbers. We didn't learn anything at all. just really, really nothing. Just a nothing burger. A lot of the stuff that we did learn, we have speculated about. And some of people have called some very direct things from this episode that I thought were pretty clever. But man, what an episode. It is very much what I've been wanting, like getting background on the actual MCU. Like, we've gotten a lot from what's in the Hex, what's been going on in the Hex, from all these other episodes. You know, it's kind of like, a lot of people didn't like those first three episodes because they were just inside the TV show.
Yeah.
But this, like, not only broke out of the TV show, not only broke out of the Hex, but it broke out of, like, the sort of constraints of WandaVision, like the time period and the, like, the setting. And we got to go back to Sokovia and see her as a child, which I thought was amazing. And then getting to see the Hydra experiments, like, seeing what happened in that room. We saw more than the experimenters saw.
I mean, to take it on one meta level, this is by far and away the most we've had of TV and movies like interplaying. I mean, obviously these are all characters from the movies, so we already are having that, but right. To see on TV the recreation of scenes from the movies, you know, to basically see like deleted scenes from Age of Ultron almost, you know. And to get to see Agatha's backstory, to get to see a whole bunch more of Wanda's backstory, and then to get to see even like it almost felt like a behind the scenes of some parts of this whole show. I just loved it. It really felt like this was them saying, like, every time you think that you know what are the walls of the sandbox that this show is playing in, they're just going to push it further. And I am so here for it.
This is the power of a connected universe and having full access to everything that they want to do in this show. You know, Feige has given like full carte blanche to these creators to be able to create in this world. And like you said, the sandbox, they have the entire sandbox to play with. And this episode is everything we've been wanting as just like, as an MCU thing, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like this is MCU movie level stuff. As you mentioned, having deleted scenes from Ultron, and that's true, but it also had sort of deleted scenes from Civil War, where they're sitting after Pietro's death. It actually could have happened after Ultron, in between Ultron and Civil War. But they're just amazing to see those scenes, like the backstory of their love, like getting that little bit of interplay between them and they're first getting to know each other. I laughed so hard when he said it's such a classic robot line when he says, it is funny because of the grievous injury of the man.
It's so good. Yeah.
I laughed so hard.
And I also have to say one thing I often talk about, obviously, is this idea of like when there's just real world truth that comes in a show about mutants and superheroes and all this kind of stuff, because like, we can't relate to the powers, but like, we can relate to grief. And
absolutely.
A couple of people have already pointed out, and I think rightly so, that the writers of that scene between Wanda and Vision, as he's helping her deal, or he's trying and realizing he can't help her deal with her grief, was beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
I think one of the things that's most frustrating about grief sometimes is on TV, it seems like no matter how sad you are, there's always that magical thing someone can say that'll cheer you up and everything's better. And her saying, like, nothing is going to cheer me up. The thing that will cheer me up is to see him again. And then Vision just accepting that and instead being present with her in her grief, but still finding a way to laugh at the sitcom. I mean, that could be out of Modern Family. You know, that could be out of any family drama. And so to put that scene in our show about witches and super robots and sentient weapons, I was like, oh, this is fantastic. This is fantastic television.
Yeah, it really is. I've been saying it all along. This show has so far been about execution of really great high art and like the emotional weight that's being given to Scarlet Witch's journey. And we finally, for the first time in the MCU, had her called Scarlet Witch. Or she says you're the Scarlet Witch, doesn't she? She doesn't say a Scarlet Witch. She says you're the Scarlet Witch.
Right. She says you're the Scarlet Witch as though it's been like a, you know, it's a real like Anakin, you're the chosen one. We're afraid of this. So here's a question. The witches coven that was going after Agatha at the start, they were also saying like, you're too dangerous, you're too powerful.
Yeah, exactly.
What if people thought Agatha was the Scarlet Witch way back in the day?
That's
a part of why Agatha is so interested in finding the actual Scarlet Witch, because someone, maybe even she, thought she was, but she wasn't.
It's possible. I think that the specific power, the chaos magic of creating things from whole cloth, creating things whole cloth into the universe, seems like a specific thing that she knows that the Scarlet Witch does. But what you put on there is something I really definitely want to talk about. And it's the fact that the parallels between the first scene with the witches in Salem and the last scene where Agatha is trying to stop Wanda for basically the same reason. She's a young upstart witch with powers beyond her station, beyond her age and station, I think they say, in that first scene. And now Agatha has turned into her mother in a way. And I want her to see that. And I care for Agatha because of that first scene when she says mother for the first time and you realize it's her own mother that's doing this to her, that's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. And then she says, I can be good.
No, you can't.
Oh my gosh, Jeff Randall. Jeff Randall joining the cast with dramatic reading there of the line. No, you can't be good, Jeff Randall says to the podcast. Welcome, man, welcome.
I tried,
you
Jeff,
can't be
I
good
tried.
Without me.
We're trying so hard. We're trying so hard to be good. But Jeff Randall, it's good to have you, buddy. Sorry, we had to get started without you. But we're just talking about.
I understand.
We're just talking about the parallels between those scenes and the fear of Agatha's power, and now Agatha fearing Wanda's power. What were you going to say about that, Matthew Fox? Did you had a point you wanted to make?
Yeah, because one thing I did notice, we talked a good deal last week, and then during the week between the episodes about the color of power and how like Wanda is red and Agatha's purple. And I did think it's interesting that the other witches, their color isn't purple, as far as I could tell. It was kind of like a grayish white.
I thought it looked blue. Yeah, I thought it was a blue. But yeah.
My color vision is definitely not the best. But certainly it's not purple. And so I think that's also another interesting thing of she was part of that coven of witches, but her power, even back then, it was a different color. So her Agatha, maybe she never thought she was the Scarlet Witch or anything, but she definitely has always been separate from the other coven of witches.
Right. I think that's true, but it also, you have to acknowledge that like they wanted a language for the show that they could show that she was taking over those streams of power, that it was reversing on them. So they needed her to be a different color so that when she changed those and started drawing their power from them, it changed to purple. It was also a visual signifier. So I don't know how much they intended that to be that, but she is definitely learning a different kind of power. They call it out. She's like, you're using the darkest kinds of magic.
Right. Yeah. You stole knowledge above your age and above your station.
Yeah.
What does it mean? What did she steal? I mean, it reminded me a lot of Caecilius with, him stealing the pages from the Book of Cagliostro.
Yeah, in Doctor Strange. Yeah.
Where, you know, that's knowledge that he's not yet ready for, or he may not yet be ready for, because it, you know, all that power is just gonna go to your head, and it did. And his eyes turned weird colors. Like, it always happens.
Well, and this might be a bridge too far, but one of the other things that happened when people in this world tried to borrow power that is not their own is they created Ultron.
Yep.
Yep. That is true.
Yep. Did you notice her mom, though? Like, whenever, I guess her mom is the leader. That's what I'm led to assume. But it seems like that her mom had a magical crown that came up whenever she activated her blue power to try to do whatever it was to Agatha. Like, it seemed like her head was wreathed in that blue magic. Like,
well, and
what's that about?
If you notice, she was not really doing she was not doing that magic before. She was doing it there at the end. She didn't get involved until all the other witches were almost out. It was almost like she was reserving her greater power because she didn't want to hurt her daughter, or maybe she didn't want to be a part of killing her own daughter. And then she
just wanted to watch.
wasted all those other witches. Just wasted them. They fall. Just these. It was pretty brutal. And then
It's pretty gross.
Yeah, for sure.
They got sucked dry from the look of it. Ooh. Reminded me of that '90s mosquito movie.
'90s mosquito movie?
You know, when the mosquitoes were like giant and would suck all of the blood out of a person, and they would be just a husk.
I don't know what movie you're talking about, but
I think it was just called Mosquito. It was terrible.
I avoided Oscar bait in the '90s, so I probably missed it.
It definitely sounds like Oscar bait for sure.
It was real gross. I spotted like talk of color in the chat when I brought up Caecilius, is that the makeup around his eyes when he took on Dormammu's power was purple. And like that could just be, you know, a visual indicator, or whatever. They decided to go with purple. And I guess the dark dimension was purple, but like are we being led to equate and assume that Agatha had knowledge from Dormammu, or is she in contact with Dormammu? Is that who's giving her power?
I wouldn't assume so personally. I think these are just colors that they have to reuse sometimes. I don't think we can assume that all the colors overlap, especially.
No, there's overlap. There are no coincidences.
Look, we gave Luke a green lightsaber because it showed up better on the sand, and then it became incredibly important canonically. Like, the MCU is such at this point that even if they had to do it for technical reasons, I feel like they'd still create a story version for it, a story reason for it as well.
Right. And if not, the fans will, and they'll just be like, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Sure.
Well, the thing is, I think that purple on the eyes is such a subtle thing, and it's just supposed to be sort of a dark, sinister look. I don't think it's really necessarily anything connected to Agatha's purple. Is very different, very vibrant, very colorful, very smoky.
It is.
The thing I did notice, I'll have to go back and look at when it happened, but when the mom really got into the battle and started like zooming her hands around or whatever to like fight her daughter, there was some orange coming off of her too, which was very reminiscent of Doctor Strange.
Oh yeah.
The way his magics work.
Now that we have Jeff here, I would want to ask, or Matt, if you know this, but I think of Jeff Moore as the encyclopedia. Is the Agatha Harkness backstory something we get in the comics? Like, is that scene from Salem something that we have seen before in comics, or is that created for this show?
I'm pretty sure that was created for this show. All I remember, and you know, what I remember of Agatha is maybe not necessarily the extent of what has been shown in the comics, but what I remember of her is that she was one of the witches during the Salem witch trials. Like, that's when she was around, and she evaded being burned at the stake, or you know, sunken in a lake or whatever. That's really all I remember, is that like she escaped that and was a part of forming a new Salem, is what they called it, somewhere in like around in Colorado, like around Denver or whatever.
I'm sure there was some sort of scene in some comic somewhere that gave a flashback of her escaping the witch trials, but I think this particular version seems pretty tailor-made for this show, especially I can't say it enough. The parallels between what she's doing, what her mother is doing to her, and what she's doing to Wanda is so perfectly paralleled. Let's get into the other things we learned from this episode, you know, the backstory of her parents, and we speculated on it early on when we first talked about the show that they would do a scene where her and her brother are sitting around watching old TV shows. And yep. we speculated maybe we'd see it earlier on, but man, it was so effective here.
It was. That scene though kind of took me out. Because I was so caught up on the story that Pietro told in Age of Ultron, where he said, you know, when the first shell hit, like we were sitting around the dinner table, and then the first shell hit and it opened up a hole in the floor and our parents fell through, but we didn't. And, you know, I grabbed my sister and we ran under the bed. Like, it didn't happen like the way that he told it. It happened differently, where they were sitting around the TV watching and then, you know, explosion from behind. And I was like, that's not how it happened. You can't do this to me.
Oh, that sucks.
I actually like that, Jeff, though. And we were talking about this before you got on, because to me, it speaks to the idea of the unreliable narrator.
So much of the show
has been about attempting to say, like, you know, here is the actual version of the story, but really it's all about who's telling the story. And yep. So it might be that they were just playing with it, but I think I'm hoping that's intentional, because I thought it was a real, like, Peter's version and Wanda's version may not match up, because traumatic memory, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
I like the idea of playing with the unreliable narrator. It's like, it's kind of what they did. I don't want to dig too deep into...
Say it.
Less than loved Star Wars, but the whole thing about the way that Luke Skywalker was, you know, going to kill Ben, the way that Ben sees it, the way that Luke sees it, the way that it actually happened, all of those are three different ways of it coming to be. And that same kind of thing could happen here of like, well, I remember it this way. Well, I remember it this way. Well, that's not how it actually happened. Like, let's use the time stone and watch it happen.
Yeah, it's the Rashomon thing. The great Japanese movie Rashomon that plays with that same idea, like the unreliable story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just not only unreliable story, but also like different perspectives on how it happened and different thought processes and different ways, just not only ways people see it, but different ways people actually saw it, you know, different perspectives on the same events can sometimes be confusing. And make these stories come out a little differently. So I don't think it's so much of a flaw, but it is a little annoying to me. I do wish they'd like maybe like, oh well, let's make popcorn first or something, you know, like,
yeah, we can't watch anything until we get to dinner.
Mr. Starofsky says in chat that Wanda did say that she remembered their childhood differently when they were talking about Halloween. So we have established the idea that sometimes her and Peter have different memories.
Yeah, but that was a different Pietro. That was faux Pietro. Fietro, if you will.
Fietro, true, yeah. True. I like the idea that might be a call out. Like, we're going to change a little something, but here's why. Because Wanda remembers it differently. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
I did just love, just on that note, a number of folks have commented that it always seems strange that when you have people in a foreign country theoretically talking in that foreign language. I like that they did a lampshade there by saying on sitcom night, we all intentionally speak English.
Yeah. We do it to practice our English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was really, really nice. Nicely done.
Yep.
So that scene was just absolutely heartbreaking. I knew it was coming the whole time. Like, I was like, okay, we're going to see the bomb, but I still just was absolutely heartbroken when it happened, when this happy little world was shattered by just that darkness that just completely consumed the screen. And it's just suddenly darkness and then a Stark weapon.
And they let us know that it was coming too. When the mom went to the window and was like watching the gunfight happen, I was like, oh no, this is the night.
Yep.
This is the night.
Yeah.
It was so, like, the whole thing, the whole trip down memory lane was just heart-wrenching the entire time. It hurts so bad, Matt. Yep. Why do you let me hurt so bad? This is all your fault.
Mr. Starofsky, by the way, says Piet Fo. Like,
Piet Fo.
I like that. That was good. Yeah, it's absolutely heartbreaking, that moment. And it continues to be heartbreaking. It's what Agatha says. She's like, let me get this straight. Your parents died. Pietro died, and now Vision's dead. And it's just like, it's been a really hard time.
Right?
Then the next scene, we get that Hydra scene. This scene is blowing my mind, mainly for the appearance of the Nexus being of Wanda, like whatever,
yeah,
like fully comics accurate Wanda, not a Halloween costume version, but like a shadow of this vision that is coming down from like the light of heaven.
Yeah, it's the silhouette of Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the voice here of the dirty casual. So what did we, for those of us who didn't see the comics, what did we see? Because I didn't understand the references there at all.
It is a character wearing a costume that the outline of which looks exactly like the costume that she wore on Halloween night, which is a reference to her comics accurate costume. But this isn't a Halloween costume. This looked like some sort of like vision from the multiverse.
Well, it's not just that. Like specifically in comics, the moniker of Scarlet Witch is a title given to her mom. Like it's passed through her family of all of these witches who are able to perform this chaos magic like this. Like it's a great title to have. And like what we saw there, what I'm assuming at least that we saw there, is that because she was being given this excess power from the Mind Stone, is that it was really putting that mantle on her shoulders, and that whole the lineage, the ancestry, whatever, of the Scarlet Witch was being passed down to her, and it's like she was taking that on, even if she didn't know it.
Right. That is definitely what it seemed like. Like she was in that moment receiving the power from the Scarlet Witch, which I was assuming was a different version of her. I did not know in comics that it's a thing that's passed down from parents, which I don't know if that's going to be the way they do it here. It does seem like Agatha knows of the Scarlet Witch, which is, if that makes a lot of sense, if it's like a moniker passed down from generation to generation, and she is the most recent
incarnation of it.
Yeah.
Well, that tracks with Agatha at the end saying, like, I thought you were just a myth.
Exactly. You know,
like a being that, or somebody that can create things on a whim like that. Like, you are the Scarlet Witch.
Her mother doesn't seem to have that power. If her mother had that power, she might have been out in the streets. Or maybe that's why her mother felt so comfortable sitting and watching TV. Maybe she just missed that bomb. I don't know.
That's the thing, though, in the comics, is that the parents that she grew up with were not her actual parents. Those were her adoptive parents.
Exactly.
So she very well could come into contact with her actual mother.
Right.
Which would then still leave room for Magneto as father.
Exactly.
I'm all here for him.
It absolutely would.
That'd be fun.
Oh.
Yeah. The door is wide open for mutants now. Like,
yes, it is.
I don't know if they're going there or they're just going to be like, hey, she's a witch. She has the power of a witch. It has nothing to do with mutantry. I'm really curious about if Pietro had powers before the Mind Stone, because clearly he was able to survive, unlike all the other people they experimented on. So it would seem like he had something that allowed him to survive as well, and not just the lineage of being the Scarlet Witch, because he's not.
Yeah, it's the mutation.
It does seem like it might be the mutation.
It's that X gene!
Yeah.
In the comics, do Peter Pietro's powers have anything to do with the fact that he's the son of the Scarlet Witch, or is that just total coincidence? Is it just like, you're a boy child, you get nothing, but you're also a mutant for reasons?
Well, it's the Scarlet Witch. See, it's the weird thing about Wanda is that her mom was the Scarlet Witch. I cannot remember her name, her actual first name.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. But her mom was the Chaos Hex Witch, whatever you want to call it, the Scarlet Witch. But also, her dad was a mutant in Magneto, so she got the chaos magic from her mom and the mutant power from Magneto, and it kind of combined into like the super powerful version, you know, that she is. And also, the Elder God Chthon made her like his vessel to come into the world, whatever. But that's another thing entirely. I think with Pietro, it's just that he is a mutant. He's
okay.
He's gotten the X gene right from his dad.
Short answer.
And that is what made him a mutant.
Yes.
Right.
he's like, is he just a mutant, or is he 5-minute explanation of who the Scarlet Witch is? He's just a mutant.
Yeah. Oh, come on. If we believed in simple answers to these questions, this whole podcast wouldn't exist.
Exactly. Let me be the nerd that I am.
So I'm gonna let him nerd out just a little bit further, Matt, if you don't mind.
Ooh, I'm ready.
Not because I think this is a whole other connection, but because I think it's interesting about this idea of the silhouette. Mr. Starosky also points out, did anyone else see the huge similarities between Wanda seeing the Scarlet Witch silhouette and the fact that in the way it's portrayed, we often see Jean Grey getting the Phoenix power through the silhouette? Like, is that just because silhouette is a comics trope, or is there supposed to be some kind of connection there of like that you sort of, the silhouette is this way of like a greater power imbibing into you?
I don't see it as a connection between those two characters. I think it is just a way that visually on television, particularly, and in comics, we have often portrayed like some sort of being reaching down from the light of heaven sort of thing. Like, it's just that image is not just from the Phoenix Force. That's from like everything ever, where like an angel reaches out from heaven or this or that. Yeah. Like, that's just power coming down at you.
Right.
So that's just, I think, and I think it's because they wanted to obscure what she was seeing. Like, I don't think we're supposed to see
the face, at least.
Yeah, the face. I don't think we're supposed to see if that's actually Wanda, or if it's some version of Wanda from the multiverse, or if it's her mother, or if it's some great grandmother. Like, we're not supposed to know who that is yet. And I'm not sure if we ever will. That might just be a comics like nod to the idea that the Scarlet Witch is a thing. But that's the thing.
Man.
What does the Scarlet Witch mean? What does it mean, the end of this episode, what does it mean that Agatha knows about the Scarlet Witch and that Wanda is that? What does it mean? Does it mean multiverse? Does it mean it's just the thing passed down? I don't know.
Do you remember in, I mean, you're going to remember, I say it like this because that's how I am. Do you remember in Black Panther when he goes to the ancestral plane, like he takes the heart-shaped herb, he gets buried, and then he sees all of the Black Panthers of the past, right? You remember that? Right?
No memory of that.
Cool.
Got it.
So that happened. So what if we get something like that with Wanda seeing the past versions of Scarlet Witch and kind of learning about that lineage and about that heritage in that moment after having not understood it at all?
I just don't know if there's time is the problem. Like, we've got one episode left, and we get that in Multiverse of Madness. Maybe like whatever happens at the end of this episode, at the end of the season, breaks the world, and Multiverse of Madness is Doctor Strange being like, you broke the world, let's figure out what happened, and they like find out the lineage of the Scarlet Witch and all that. That could be great. Like, that could be awesome. Yeah.
For the interviews I'm reading, I think it's pretty clear this is not going to be a show that gets resolved at the end of it the way you often expect from a season, that this is going to be is all leading up to Multiverse of Madness, which then we don't have a release date. So, yeah.
Well, it's in 2022, I believe.
Yeah, March 2022.
Yeah, so we've got So that's a huge cliffhanger if this doesn't give some sort of resolution. I think, and that's why I think what we got this episode is probably about all the backstory we're going to get. I think we'll get her being like, what is the Scarlet Witch? Maybe a little bit of an explanation from Agatha. But then we've got to deal with White Vision, which we haven't even discussed yet.
Oh, man. I'm so excited about White Vision showing up.
It's going to be a cold, man. It's going to be so freaking cold.
Ice cold.
Once again, for the dirty casuals, who might White Vision be?
Well, at the White end of the Vision. Episode, you saw White Vision, right?
Yeah. White Vision in comics is a version of Vision that shows up after being destroyed and rebuilt, and he has no emotions in him, no emotions at all. He doesn't really even have a memory of his life with Wanda, and Wanda has absolutely full memory. Like, they have kids in front of him of like, we had a life together. You know, these are your children. He's like, I don't have any memory of you children at all. I have no connection to you. Anything that you know of past Vision is not in this. I am not your father. Like, says to the kids, they're like eight. And he's like, I am not your father. The man that you know as your father is not me. And they're just like, are you kidding? And she straight up is just like, you're a monster. It's so great.
What's different here, and I still think that's going to be horrifying, but not in the same way, because what's different here is the Vision that is their father still exists inside the Hex. So if they send in Vision, and they have a face-off, they've defended their home, as we've seen in the trailers, from this white Vision who they're finally launching, which we knew, we called it last week that it was some form of Vision.
A version of Vision.
Yeah, and we'll get to it, but Hayward has lied. She did not steal Vision's body, clearly. He had it all along, so that was a big lie. And so her terrorist actions are greatly exaggerated. My point is there's two versions of Visions in this world. There's a version that's created whole cloth by Wanda inside the Hex, and now the other version of Vision is going to be coming into the world to face off with them. And it's going to be, it's going to be awful, because that's always an awful thing when you've got the lover who's been turned cold and turned against the hero, and and they're attacking them. It's always an awful trope, but in this case, at least there's a fake one that can fight with her, a Vision, if you will. No, that doesn't work.
No, that's a different thing. What if, there's been a lot of people saying that, like, we're going to see a big surprise cameo, a big surprise actor that Paul Bettany has said that he has always wanted to work with his whole life. What if he's just trolling? What if Paul Bettany is just trolling everybody, saying that the actor he's wanted to work with his whole life is himself?
Yeah.
And the white Vision is like him fighting himself is the thing that, like, he's been most looking forward to throughout his whole career.
That is very funny.
I mentioned a while ago, what if it was a Jarvis coming back? Which is, again, Paul Bettany. So you could have kind of like a Vision versus Jarvis of some kind.
Yeah.
I think that could be fun. My own theory is, and granted, it's an actor he got to work with a bit, but maybe not as much as he wanted. I want James Spader voicing that one.
Yeah.
Because we did have, back in the Ultron day, that was the original question of, is it going to be, is Vision created by Ultron, or did they rescue it? And that was their first concern. I'd love it if maybe White Vision is still controlled by that's Ultron coming back in some way. And that's the big bad we have. Because I always thought we didn't get enough Ultron. You know, that's such a great villain.
I agree completely. And I love James Spader. I love James Spader as Ultron. I think that movie is super underrated. And it's not Age of Ultron. As we've said many times, it's Weekend of Ultron. And Weekend at Ultron's. It's like a Weekend at Bernie's parody.
Yep.
But I really wish we got more of that. And so, please bring it. Let's get into the chat and see where else it leads this conversation.
I do have one question, though, before we get into that. Is Hayward was tracking Vision inside the Hex, but that wasn't the Vision body. Like, that wasn't the actual body of Vision.
Right.
What was he tracking? How does he know?
It sounds like
that was actually Vision.
A vibranium signature. Which
right, that's what Darcy said.
It sounds like she was able to create vibranium, which is kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Waterfall Angel points out that if she can make vibranium, she can make bank. Like, that's some valuable stuff.
I mean, he said that was $3 billion worth of vibranium.
Yeah. So is Hayward just like, oh, there's another Vision body I can take advantage of. I'm going to get to it. That's $3 billion worth of my budget right there. Let's go get some vibranium. is that a big part of Hayward's motivation here? Or is that, I don't know. That's it. It seems a little silly. I like Hayward with the mission of, I'm just here to stop sentient weapons. Like, that's what I do. That's actually my job. I'm here to do that, you know?
Yeah. And the power source of siphoning off a little bit of Wanda's power to power the white Vision.
That's right.
Is what kind of technology do they have to be able to do that? Like, what have they been working with to be able to do that? Like, there's a lot of unanswered questions here still about S.W.O.R.D.
I don't know if I feel like that's too hard of a thing, just because it just feels like a thing where in any version of this scene, they just like take a few wires and hook them up to the thing, and you've got a Fitz-like character who comes in and goes, "I've routed the da da da," and they just
show me that Fitz-like character. Yeah,
show me Fitz.
Show me Fitz.
Show me Fitz.
Show me Fitz on screen, or else he's not there.
We still haven't seen the engineer yet, have we?
Yeah, we still don't know who the aerospace engineer is.
If it's even a thing, like it is weird. She like. It could have just been, I'm texting my aerospace engineer, and then her team shows up with her, that vehicle to get her through the hex. And that could be all that scene was supposed to signify, but it definitely has the internet speculating.
But Matt, are you suggesting that it's possible that we took one completely out of context line and created a whole fantasy of what we wanted to see from it that has no basis in reality? That fandom would never do that.
Yeah, man. Green lightsabers. Let's turn to the chat real quick. Just so you know, we do these live watches every Friday morning with all the new Marvel content. We're going to be doing Falcon Winter Soldier as well, and Loki and all these shows. So pumped. So join us for the live watches at 8 a.m. You can go to strandedpanda.com/MCUcast and you can or just go to strandedpanda.com and click through to MCUcast and you can find a links and how to watch do the live watch with us and the times and everything. And then we go on twitch.tv/strandedpandatv. You can go there and follow us and you'll know when we're going live, and that's where you can join the conversation live. So let's hear what the people have in the chat, Mr. Fox.
Sure. So let's first talk about Agatha. ADLCPH asks, the legend of the Scarlet Witch echoing across the multiverse is a theory I really get behind, and the dynamic of Agatha wanting to know how much she did it, I loved. So I think we've talked a good deal about this, but I'm just kind of curious what you all think of this idea of what's this the legend of it that, like, what would Agatha have known about the Scarlet Witch?
It's really interesting because where did she learn? Like, we know she grew up in this coven of witches, her mother, then she killed that coven. Does she then go off and study with other witches and learn her craft? Or where was she learning her craft before? Does she have some connection to the dark magics? Is some character like Dormammu or Mephisto or whatever, like, connecting her and teaching her things beyond her station and age? I don't know. So I feel like the rumors and myth would have come from whoever taught her, wherever she learned her magics, but we just don't know where that is. Or if she's been traversing the multiverse, like grabbing Pietro from the Fox Land.
Yeah, Pietro doesn't mean fake Pietro. It's Fox Pietro.
I love that.
Yes.
Yes.
We are Fox Pietro truthers. We will not let go of that.
Yep. So something that I remember just now that kind of, you talking about Agatha and traversing the multiverse, like that, this triggered this memory. In the Scarlet Witch comic from the 90s, like number 4, when she found out that she's a Nexus being and what that means, the person that she was fighting, Lore, who was a version of Wanda, or it looked like Wanda, but it was from a different reality, whatever. She like has been consuming other realities, almost like a Galactus of other realities. The type of magic that she uses that is like her specialty is necromancy. And Agatha specifically pointed out in this episode, necromancy is difficult. I feel like it's a bit of a stretch to say that there's going to be a connection from that, but it's interesting that they picked necromancy to talk about rather than
also
anything else.
We've been talking about necromancy all season because of the vision of it all. So I think the idea that she's doing necromancy, or that, and she had to bring it up with Pietro, like it made sense why she didn't get his body and it had holes in it. Like I hear you, but I think that's like, there's plenty of necromancy already in this show for that to be like a connection to the comics character of Lore. It sounds like all the magic is hard, and that's what Agatha was so sort of jealous of Wanda, because she's like, even these simple illusions, this mind control is easy, but then these simple illusions, when she turns the thing into a bird and flies around the room, like that takes years of study. And not for Wanda. For Wanda, she turns an entire town into whatever she wants purely by instinct.
I want to say illusion and transmutation are very different things. Like, oh, I'm a dungeon master. They need to write better.
Yes. No, it is very important that magic follow the proper rules that we know magic work by.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And well, they're building those rules in this universe. We'll find out what the rules they work
by.
We
do have a comment on that we'll get to, but I wanted to say a couple other things about Agatha from the chat. We started to have some good conversations, and I'm sure there's a lot more to go on about, you know, where is Agatha going to fall? Is Agatha going to be a hero? Is Agatha going to want to be part of the villain? And there's two comments we want to make there from the chat. The first one is Waterfall Angel says, the lines, please I can be good, no you cannot, of Agatha talking to her mother, that Waterfall Angel says, gave me Loki Odin vibes of I did it for you, father, no Loki.
Absolutely. Ooh. Now you've got me thinking, after hearing those words again, I think that we're going to get those lines or a similar line from Scarlet Witch. Like after all the parallel stuff I'm talking about. Like, what if that's the thing that, like, Scarlet Witch is, like, on the edge of being destroyed by, because Agatha is working with White Vision to destroy the Hex and destroy her little Westview land. And then Wanda's like, I know I'm powerful, but I can be good.
And no, you can't. I've become my mother.
And then she realizes that she's become her mother. And that then, like, becoming your mother is the real villain of WandaVision.
Yeah.
See, if we're going to go that, I want the kids to go evil. But that's because I like really dark stories.
Right.
You know, honestly, like, I like the dichotomy between the two of, like, Agatha is seemingly our big bad at this point. But then again, she's trying to figure out how in the hell Wanda did all of this. And she's got like thousands of people enslaved. And that's a bit of a bad thing. And Agatha might be trying to save everybody from that.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, Agatha says I can be good. And she clearly then kills her whole coven, but it's a coven who's trying to kill her. So right now, Agatha seems like Agatha's powerful. She seems like she's pretty dark. She seems a little sadistic because she's killing dogs and strangling children, but she thinks of these things as illusions. These are just magic to her. These are just
because they were just created from nothing. They're not real.
These aren't real children. These aren't real. Like, as far as she understands it, at least we think, these are just things that Wanda is creating. So to her, this is just a video game she's playing. She's playing GTA right now. She's just she's murdering hookers and shooting cops in GTA, and it's like whatever.
And by the standards of heroism that we've already established in this universe, like Frank Castle's looking at her like, you know, oh no, she's all good, you know.
She's great. Yeah. She's doing fine.
And I think it's very important that she specifically says, "Wanda, you're dangerous." Like, to me, I think that is, there is some level of, because, I mean, Agatha clearly is also, she wants to know how, I think she wants Scarlet Witch's power. She wants to be able to do things. But I think she also has that, it's that element of, you know, Wanda, you're out of control.
Yeah.
And which to me, I mean, and this is my own sort of hill to die on, but I think that, like, Wanda never really being held accountable for the actions at the beginning of Civil War is something that I'm still thinking about. And we've had that ad where we remember of, you know, that Wanda still does carry guilt for what happened in
Sokovia,
Lagos. Thank you. So I like the idea of Agatha both wanting the power Wanda has, but also saying, like, she's saying, Wanda, you not knowing what you're doing with the power is dangerous, because she remembers that when Agatha didn't know what she was doing with her power, her mom and her sisters got killed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
yeah. Yep. I killed my whole coven because I didn't understand my power. I'm not going to let you do that to this town.
Yeah. 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 Ooh. Maybe she feels regret. That's good. That's good.
Oh, Agatha's the hero. Ooh. It was Agatha all along.
It was Agatha all along.
So, and to wrap this up, here's another comment from the chat. Pavinovich, I think, sorry, folks, asks, what role will Agatha play in the coming showdown with White Vision and Sword?
Oh,
I feel like we've kind of got four sides now. We've got Agatha, we've got Wanda and her version of Vision, although what her version of Vision is going to do, who knows?
Right.
And then we've got Hayward and Sword, and then we've got Monica Wu Darcy. And all sorts of different alliances could happen among those four different groups.
All of them are not on the same side. Like none of those sides, even the sides you described, are not clean. Like,
yeah,
you have
they're not clean lines.
Monica, who knows what her real allegiances are, because she seems to like have a lot of connection to the outside world and like the space stuff and like Captain Marvel and this other team. Then you've got Sword proper. Then you've got Wu, who really is just like a FBI agent trying to protect people. Like he has a very specific thing that he is. I bet Monica's lines are very different than Wu's. Like you could absolutely see a world where like they end up on opposite sides if something needs to happen that Monica thinks is important that Wu thinks is too far. Like there's,
yep.
And they're like the most closely related, and even they are so far from what it could be. And then Wanda and Vision, you'd think they're like right there together, but as we've talked this entire time, this could come down to Vision being like, Wanda, you have to stop. Like what?
Yeah, you have to let me go.
You have to let me go. Like your grief is causing a lot of people pain, and you have to stop hurting people.
And then what about if Pietro is actually, you know, the Fox Pietro, and he's got his, and he was like knocked out of Agatha's control. Like what if he's got his own motivations?
Absolutely.
And like he's doing a team up with Monica because all he said was Snooper's going to snoop. And like what if at that point they have a conversation? And then maybe he's teamed up with Monica, but then he betrays her because he's a jerk sometimes.
What if he comes in and goes, whoa, Super's going to snoop. It's just like you, Photon. And she's like, what?
When Vision asks in the Avengers compound, Wanda says the one thing that will heal my grief is getting to see him again. And she means Peter, Pietro, in that scene. And we just talked about how, like, you know, the point of our grief is learning to accept that and overcome it. I hope that's the direction they're going. I wonder, though, if maybe what we're going to get is some level of, like, Wanda, you can never have Vision back, but there is now a version of your brother back. And that, like, that maybe the finale is that, like,
you have to choose.
Peter is back, or Pietro isn't back, but Peter's back, and that Wanda can have a sort of, like, you can't have everything back, but you do have a new version of your brother. You have a new family you can build. And that's part of what lets her have that like step back from the edge moment.
This is your brother, but from a different verse. So it's your brother from a different mother.
Or as we talked about, this Pietro tells her the story of how the Foxverse ends, which clearly ends with like Magnus running everything and like Magneto. Right. Just like, and she like manifests the entire Fox reality of mutants and their power and like her family that she doesn't have in this universe gets manifest into this world.
Mm. I have a strong hope that the surprise thing at the very end is going to be a Fassbender Magneto, and I'm trying hard to let go of that. Don't give me hope, Matt. Don't give me hope.
Here's another thing.
I want that so bad.
So I've thought a lot about the whole like, what is big enough to be like a big reveal? And like, I know that it wasn't when Elizabeth Olsen said that there was something at Luke Skywalker level. She was asked that. It wasn't like she volunteered that information exactly. So like, and does she even understand what a Luke Skywalker level event is? Like, does she fully grasp what that meant to Star Wars fans? Like that's a whole other discussion. But if it is, like, we keep talking about one big character because that's what Bettany said. There was a character, but it doesn't have to be one. It could be like an entire verse, like the Fox verse, or it could be some big, like it could be all of the Fantastic Four showing up, or it could be some big event where it's like not just one character, but an entire like team or group of characters. But at this point, it's so late in the game. I don't know that we have that. I don't know if we have time for that. I feel like we have so many things to wrap up,
but they're not going to. This is going to lead into Doctor Strange. They're like, this is going to ripple throughout eternity.
I agree with you, but I do think they're going to have to like tell the story they're telling, which I think the story of White Vision versus Wanda is like going to be an epic thing that needs to happen, a battle, and Agatha mixed in that. And I think that story is going to get told here, and then it's going to have ripples that go into the rest of the stories.
I keep tearing up when I think about when Wanda was in the room with all the pieces of vision, and she goes up to his head and puts her hand on like on the hold. You remember in Infinity War when he's like, you know, he put her hand there, is like, tell me what you feel, and she says, I just feel you. And here she's saying, I can't feel you.
Yeah.
I can't feel you.
Like, I can't feel him. I watched Infinity War last night, actually, and man. And the last thing Vision said before he died, before she killed him, she sends the energy into him, and he says, all I feel is you, as he's dying. And then she's holding it. I says, I can't feel him. Like, that's so tough, man. Okay, let's speed round. Let's quicksilver round the chat.
Well, and I'm okay if we go a little past 10:30, but still. Hera JK asks, so we know Agatha wasn't in Westview originally. Was Agatha the missing person that Wu was looking for?
I doubt it, because she wasn't in Westview. Like, whoever Wu was looking for was in Westview, we think.
Guessing. She's saying, what if Agatha went, like, Wanda does the thing in Westview, Agatha follows her to Westview, Wu follows Agatha to Westview.
Possibly, but I think that the what Wu says in the beginning is that he's coming here because he hasn't heard from his informant in a while, and, like, his informant lives in Westview is what I think we gathered from that first conversation.
Yeah, and next of kin have no memory of this person.
Yeah, and she has no next of kin, it seems like, at least possibly.
Right.
Yeah.
Going to Vision, Brian V. Klein says that Westview Vision and White Vision, that they could meld together, and he points out that Shuri, remember, took all this information from him back in Infinity War. So what if you sort of get to combine Hex Vision, White Vision, Shuri, and then we do get all fully Vision back in the MCU?
I would love to get Vision back. I do think, as you were talking about with the death of Pietro and her grief, getting Vision back in his original form would be tricky for the story they're telling of her learning to deal with grief.
Right.
But
also very true.
Man, I want Vision back because Paul Bettany has proven himself in this series to be so charismatic. Like, I'm watching these shows that are based on like ancient TV, like the earliest of TV. and I am so very entertained, and it's all because you watch Dick Van Dyke, and the reason that show is wonderful is because the actors and actresses on it are absolutely wonderful. Their charisma, their performances are great. You can still watch those today. And like the little scenes they showed, I was like, I want to go watch the Walnut episode now. But
season 2, episode 21.
That's right. But all of that happening, like, Bettany is that level of actor. He's that level of a performer that I could watch him in, like, what is ostensibly like a show I would not want to watch today. Like, I don't have the drive to watch old TV today, but like, man, he's so good. He's just so good. He's such a good performer. I don't want him leaving the MCU.
Right. So Small Biggs asked, with so much character development of Wanda in the episode, do you think it'll be a letdown for her to not be the big bad of the MCU's future? I'll jump in since you guys are being quiet. I think it's so possible. I think it is entirely possible that she is the big bad of Multiverse of Madness that Strange is trying to take down.
Yeah,
like, I think that too. That's, I think it's very possible that there's a kind of like, she almost gets talked down, but then, something where like Vision or like Monica is talking her down, but then Hayward brings in White Vision at the worst time. Like, to me, White Vision will be the thing that sets her off. And I think we're going to get a like Willow Buffy season 6 kind of thing of where she almost is there, but she goes very dark almost by the end of this. And then she's the villain of Multiverse of Madness.
I think that's possible. I do think that the reveal that Hayward was lying on her, as it were, about her stealing the body and over-exaggerating the things that she's done up until now. And now we know she did not do any of this on purpose. Like, at some point, she kind of starts to understand, I think, that she has control. But she created Westview. That was not a deliberate action. She had no idea she could do that.
Right.
She just was able to do that. And so, like, I think that she if she ends up being a villain, in a way it'll be disappointing because I don't think up till now she made choices that led her there. Now she might make a choice at the end of this whole thing that leads her to that, and that could yeah. still be.
I'm thinking that the White Vision showing up and the explanation from Hayward or whatever, like, I think that is going to be the point that sets her off to where she says, how dare you? Like, yeah. I am going, how dare you do this? Like, you told me that, that, you know, he was gone, that you were disassembling him, but here he is altogether functional. How dare you do this? How dare you lie to me? Shatter reality. Or whatever it is, yeah. whatever it is that is done.
Yeah. Now, villain implies that she has like agency and makes decisions to be bad or makes decisions to do uncaring things toward others. I do think there's a possibility that the multiverse of madness could mean she's driven crazy by the appearance of White Vision, and she does something that breaks reality, similar to her character in comics, which she is in comics. The Avengers have to team up to go kill her. They team up to try to go kill her because she is so powerful and she's so mentally ill. And it's a really sad and tragic thing. They don't want to do it, but they see no other option because she is so powerful and so broken that she can't help, but like, she's just reshaping reality constantly to her own will. And she doesn't even have control over it, it seems.
Yep. Yep. And then we get House of M, and
all of the movies over the next few, the next cycle, the next phase, just have constant change. Things are changing around them constantly because the world is shifting. Each one happens in its own pocket reality because the shifting timelines, you know?
Yeah.
Man, that would be an insane amount of continuity that would have to be maintained throughout like a year's worth of movies and shows.
Right.
Like to have that be the through line. Like what if somebody comes into like, they just like Spider-Man,
right. You know,
and they just watched Spider-Man 3 after having not watched WandaVision. They're like, what in the hell is going on?
We are now solidly into, you have to do your homework to watch these shows. And
oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, and Feige said as much that this show was going to be a must watch before you watch Multiverse of Madness. That when they first talked about this show being a thing, and like the fact that we're there, when we saw Turn in the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they drew a strong connection between the movies and the television series, we were like, mind blown, this is crazy. But yeah. Now it's like, this isn't just like trickle down continuity. This show is leading into what is happening in the future. And it's right. allowing like, for so much fun
driving
speculation.
That.
Yeah. This is the comics. This is the way the comics universe is built, and you right. have to know the characters before you go into the big crossovers. And it's just, this is just darn exciting, man. Just darn exciting.
Here's kind of a counterpoint. Let's be open to all the perspectives here. I want to hear what you guys have to think. Yamalet Loca, I think that's how I'm pronouncing it right, says, I'm curious what you guys think now that there's officially magic in the MCU. I said it earlier. Personally, I find it very forced, given the science explanations the MCU is known for. And I think I like the science a lot better than the magic. Even Doctor Strange felt forced to me.
Hmm. Mm. I hear that. And I can see just not being around, not being here, not being a magic stan and being like, this is a bridge too far for what I want. But I think they have done a good job so far, at least in Doctor Strange, of explaining how that magic works in a sciencey way, and how it's just drawing power from different dimensions and being able to draw off of different power sources to do different spells, which are really just different technology that we don't understand.
Right.
And I'm okay with it. I think it's fun, and you got to go somewhere different. They've been doing, we can't just always be building bigger Iron Man suits, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like you have to like, first off, like looking at the verse that we have so far, there are so many science-based things. Like, yeah, science could be dangerous, but that's not the only story that the world has, basically. There's so many different possibilities in the comics that they can draw from. You got to make a solid explanation for, you know, why vampires show up in Blade. Yeah. And science can't probably necessarily be the answer to it, because that would be like, that would be a version of vampires that everybody would just hate on and would be just shunned universally. Like, there's got to be some mystical in there. Like, bring me the mystical. Even if you have a sciencey explanation for it, of its, you know, technology that maybe they, the sorcerers know how to harness but don't fully understand themselves. Like, sure, however you want to present it to me, but like, there's so many different things in comics that, you know, there's something for everybody. And maybe magic's not your thing, but hopefully they're finding a way to bring you into the enjoyment as well. That's the only thing I can ask of them. And that's all any of us can ask of them.
Mm. I feel like one thing the MCU has established, and this is something that gets talked about a lot in like religious circles these days, is the idea that like the mystical, the magic, is just what science hasn't figured out yet. You know, right. And so to 3,000 years ago, the sun moving across the sky seemed completely magical, so it was a guy in a chariot pulling it across the sky. Now we know the science of it. To Earth people, when, you know, Thor appeared in Scandinavia, Thor and Loki and Odin seemed like gods, but we find out they actually are just people from a different realm that have different powers. And so I think the world, the MCU is doing a very good job of sort of letting their, like, that the mystical is a thing, but that a lot of times the mystical, what is mystical to one people is actually just purely scientific to somebody else.
Right.
But that we're not going to, like, they're not giving us midichlorians. You know, they're not going to ever try to say, here's the rules of it in a very specific way. They're leaving the mystery of it, but also saying, like, it doesn't mean that there aren't, to some extent, rules if you understood, like, that it could look like science if you knew enough.
Yeah.
And there's so many Star Wars references in this episode.
I hate it.
Gosh, it's like MCU and Star Wars are owned by the same people or something.
It's crazy.
All right, I want to get into this real quick. Erroneous15 said in the chat, why did Hayward think she could resurrect Vision? And then Kaz Tenchi says, what is Hayward? And Brian V. Klein says, why is Hayward? And I
yep.
I'll do you one better.
Being silly, but I think, how is Hayward? I think they're onto something here in that Hayward knew way more than he should. Wanda has no idea that she can resurrect Vision. Like, that's not a power she knows about. She has telekinesis and telepathy. She does not have resurrecting Vision powers. And he knew that. He tells her,
Hayward,
like,
is Mephisto.
Hayward was pushing her hard. Like, the way that he, like, heartlessly showed her Vision's body, and the way that he, something is going on with Hayward, more so than I have even thought up till now.
Right.
Yeah.
Hayward is sus.
When she shatters the windows, and floats down, and all the guards put their guns on her, he tells them, stand down.
Yeah.
He wants to see what's happening. Like, he wants to see this play out. Let's see if she can bring him back. See if she can bring him back online.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe it's the power source thing. I guess I could write it off as say, like, it's just the power source thing. He knows that they need a Mind Stone derived power source to bring him back online, and she is that Mind Stone power source. Like, maybe that's all it is. And maybe he's baiting her into bringing Vision back to life so they can have their sentient weapon that he wants. But, like, it just seemed like he was baiting her to go create Westview. Like, it seemed very much like he was baiting her. I don't know.
I had this image of that the scientists had all decided a long time ago they can't figure out anything about Vision, and he's literally just waiting for her. And that while she's, like, sitting in that lobby yelling at that poor security guard, he's telling everyone, okay, places, everyone, places, and they're all getting into place to make it look like they're doing all, like, the picking apart, because that scene seemed 100% staged for her.
Yeah. Well, also, like, it doesn't track with what he has said. It looks like he says we're disassembling the world's most advanced sentient weapon, and it seems like they're just doing a bad job of pulling apart Vision. But
right,
whenever he's activating White Vision, he says specifically, we've pulled this thing apart and put him together so many times, we just needed a power source. Like, you knew exactly what you were freaking doing, Hayward. Yeah. You knew what you were doing.
I like that, actually. Right. I guess it makes sense that maybe he was just trying to get her to power Vision up. It just seemed very suspect the way when I was watching those scenes. Any other things we can speed round through? I know it's time we get off of here.
I think that was about all we had from the chat. We had a really great. A lot of comments. I may have missed some things from before, and I apologize for that. But I think we had a lot of great comments. Thank you to everyone, as always, in the chat for keeping us on our toes and giving us great things to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, this has been a blast. This whole seven-week process of watching these every Friday morning has just been like the highlight of my week, getting to hang out with other people who love this stuff as much as we do and getting to live chat during the episodes and then getting to do this immediately afterwards and just like the whole community talking about this stuff. So please, if you dig this stuff, make sure you're subscribed. If you're watching on, if you're listening on any podcatcher, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review if you can, or a thumbs up or whatever your app has. And if you're on YouTube or Twitch, subscribe, follow, hit the bell notification on YouTube, those things, and comment. Those things really help us out to grow this thing. We're a very small network, just a few people making these things, and it's been really just a blast to do, and I can't wait. This is just the beginning. This whole year of Marvel content is going to be I just only see this getting more fun as we grow the community and have more people get involved with these live watches and stuff. So thank you again, Matthew Fox. Tell them all about what you got going on.
Sure. Thanks so much for letting me be a part of this. As always, folks can find me by going to theethicalpanda.com. That's my website, or just looking for me on the Stranded Panda .com website. You can find my podcasts about Star Wars superhero ethics. One of the big things that the Star Wars Universe podcast has been doing is movie watches. The next one is going to be coming up on Sunday, March 7th, and we're going to do it live, kind of like we're doing here. So we're going to do a live episode watch of it in Scener at 2 p.m. Eastern, and then a live recording of the episode we do about The Force Awakens at 4:30. And that'll be with a great group of people, just like we do here. You can live chat with us, give us thoughts, give us comments, tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like. And it'll be all about the Star Wars movie, The Force Awakens, and that's on Sunday, March 7th. All the information will be in the Stranded Panda Facebook podcast. All the information will be in the Facebook group for the Stranded Panda group.
So we'll make sure to get it on. If, in case you're not a Facebook person, we'll make sure to get it up on the strandedpanda.com as well. Just click on the Star Wars Universe podcast, and it'll have information of how to join their Scener and join in all that fun.
Exactly. And stay tuned, because if you're also a fan of the MCU Trivia Nights, Star Wars Trivia Nights will be kicking off the next week, Sunday, March 14th, also at 3 p.m. Eastern. So keep an eye out for all that.
Oh, yeah, and you guys got Bad Batch coming up soon, too.
Yep, Bad Batch is going to come out. I don't think Bad Batch is quite this level of popularity, so I don't know if we'll do a live episode watch of Bad Batch, but we're certainly thinking about it. But definitely there's going to be review episodes of Bad Batch coming out pretty regularly. So all the Star Wars stuff.
Heck yeah. When does Bad Batch start? That's real soon?
May 4th.
The 4th.
Wow. Cool.
May the 4th be with you.
Neat. All right. Well, thank you again, Matthew Fox, for joining us. And Jeff, always a pleasure, my friend.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. This has been a hell of an experience, man. Having this many people show up at live, and then having as many people as we have had listening to the podcast, it's crazy how much this community has grown over the past few weeks. And I gotta say, I love all of them 3,000.
Yeah, we love you 3,000 guys. Peace.
Until next time, true believers.
Thank you for joining us for the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. Available everywhere you get podcasts, and now a video version streaming live on twitch.tv/strandedpandatv and available at youtube.com/strandedpanda. And if you'd like to learn more about all of our other podcasts, geeky projects, and ways to support the network, visit strandedpanda.com.